Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hello and welcome to The Power of Reinvention. I'm so excited for us to be here today for what is now the 100th episode of The Power of Reinvention. This is exciting. Babs, welcome and thank you for being my 100th guest. This is a monumental moment. I know, right? And I just did an interview with someone a little while ago today for their show, and I was telling them about the virtual chat series that I used to do. So for those who don't know, I wrote a book called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For? I'd been working on content for years. I'd been blogging for the HuffPost and Thrive Global and all kinds of different articles and stories and speaking a lot about reinvention. But the book really came together and was ready to be published. And my pub date was, are you ready for this? March 7th, 2020. Now, we all know that that was about a week before we were all sent home to live behind our computer screens and, you know, shelter and home. And that was a kind of crazy time. So I myself had to actually reinvent my book launch plan. I had to figure out how I was going to now introduce this incredible book that I had worked on for so long to an audience. I have 30 incredible people that are interviewed and that are in the book, 26 power tools that help people figure out how to do some exercises that kind of get you off square one. And basically, you know, had to kind of live my own mantra of reinventing your own life. And that was kind of exciting and kind of crazy. But it's also what put me into the virtual chat series business, because I ended up doing book signing events from my computer at home and had hundreds of people joining me every time I did a virtual event, and then launched the podcast. So this is an exciting thing for me to be at episode 100 of the podcast. And Babs, I'm thrilled to have you here. So thank you.
No, thank you. This sounds very cool. And love that I'm the 100th.
Well, we're going to talk about why you're the 100th, because you are a game changer. And for the audience that's tuning in, I'm going to share a little bit of Babs' background. Babs Urengai is the founder and CEO of the executive coaching and marketing consulting firm CC Babs, where he combines decades of executive marketing experience and extensive leadership and coaching education. He's a graduate of Columbia University's Advanced Coaching Certification Program, and he worked as an executive at such blue-chip corporations as Unilever, IBM, and Paramount. In his most recent role as an SVP at Paramount, he led on-air promotions, media, performance marketing, and data solutions. And before joining Paramount, Babs was the executive partner management consulting at IBM, where he led B2B marketing solutions for IBM's Interactive Experience, IX, division. He also spent the bulk of his career at Unilever as the Vice President of Global Communications, planning for all Unilever global brands. Prior to joining Unilever, Babs spent 3.5 years as a Vice President of Client Services for the interactive firm Agency.com and several years at the advertising agency DMB&B as a Vice President and as a Vice President on Procter & Gamble. So, and the reason I wanted to keep all of this incredible background of yours, A, because kudos to you, to the experience, the history, and the career that you have had. And I think what's really extraordinary for so many of our peers that are going to be listening to this, Babs, is to go, wait, what? He's done all of those things, and now he is an executive coach. I want a bit of that. How do I get to have that life? And I think this is a conversation that so many people are having right now. And it's really incredible when you think about the change and the career change that this has been for you. So that is a major pivot, a major reinvention right there.
Yeah. It is. You know, I think, first of all, I love doing it. And I had been working kind of in marketing executive for 30 plus years. And, you know, my kids are older now. And out of the house, all my big expenses are gone. So I think there was a kind of a perfect moment, especially during COVID, for me to make that pivot and to go back to school and get this coaching certification. So it's a big pivot, but I don't consider it as big of a risk as it may sound, because I tried to do it 10 years earlier. And when I moved back from London, when I was at Unilever, and my wife was like, no.
Now's not the time.
Keep your job. You need a job. And, you know, it's great to take a risk when it's just us, but you don't want to risk their, you know, colleges and all that. And while I felt like I was pretty confident that I'd be successful, and maybe she was too.
Yes.
Obviously not as confident as me, because she's like, no, why don't you stick around and wait till the right time to do that. So,
yeah.
But so, well, so I did wait it out a little, and I'm happy I did it when I did.
And you know what? It's interesting. And I love that you just shared right out of the bat. You know, people are like, oh, okay, you get to a certain point in your life and you're ready and you make that move, or you don't make that move. The fact that you contemplated this 10 years ago, kudos to you for really kind of turning that over and trying to figure it out and talking with your partner and, you know, really assessing whether it was the right time. And you held on to that and thought, you know what? There will be a right time, and I'll know when it is the right time. And I think that's so critical for people to realize that, you know, don't let that just disappear. Just contemplate when is the right time. But before we go too deep into this, I want to take you way back in time. Speaking of time, I want to go back to little Babs. Who was little Babs? What were you up to? What did you think you would end up doing with your life? You know, were you the entrepreneur on a street corner? Were you, you know, selling lemonade? Were you dreaming of being a doctor, a lawyer? Like, are you on any kind of a path, or have you lived a bit of a path or a journey that you ever imagined your life would take you on?
That is, wow, that's a big question. When I was little Babs, so... So my, it's interesting. So I was born in a little hut in a village in India. So I think when I was born, entering this world, the chances of me being where I am today were about, you know, one in a trillion or whatever. It just didn't seem like anything that could possibly happen. And at that time, of course, I didn't even know that. But it was really my father that, you know, was a very gifted and special individual that got a chance to come here while me and my mom were in India. And then he came here as a doctor, and he brought us over a little while later. So that's how I got here. And then when I was a kid, you know, what do I want to be? I mean, I was totally a baseball kid. Like, that was my thing. You know, I loved everything about it. I, you know, flipped and sold baseball cards. I did the lemonade thing too, but I think everybody did back then. You know, I had the newspaper.
Well, baseball cards, you know, that's very entrepreneurial. So, you know, that's very lemonade standish from an entrepreneur's perspective.
But no, I was a good ball player, and, you know, I had ambitions of really, I wanted to become a pro ball player, but of course I didn't have the size or skill or anything to become that, as very few do. And then secondarily, I wanted to be a media broadcaster of sports if I wasn't going to be an athlete myself. So when I was a kid, that was definitely my, I'd call that more of a dream than a ambition. But then, you know, as I got older, I think, I very much skewed towards, this idea of being in, media. I found that interesting. I studied that when I started as an engineering major, and that was mainly because my dad is a doctor. And of course, Indian kids have to become either doctors or engineers. So they kind of made, and I wasn't going to become a doctor. So they made the decision for me to be an engineering major. And I quickly moved out of that and back into an area that I thought might be more fun and interesting. And, you know, and I had kind of a ton of other stuff that I went through as a child. Obviously, I was Indian in a very white world. And so there were challenges associated with that. But also, I think a lot of learnings that came from that, a lot of... you know, I think you build up a bit of resiliency and other stuff that, you know, that you that really come in handy later in life when you're in a situation where, you know, you're very different and you're kind of from the outside and looking at it from the outside in, but, you know, very much being a part of it. You know, I had a kind of a two life.
It sounds like that fueled you in a way that maybe you did not realize at the time, but sometimes that can really fuel someone to be successful and overcome certain barriers or odds or, you know, the environment that you're dealing with, right?
You know, it's funny. I had kind of a double barrel because my parents were, you know, Indian off the boat. So they had very specific expectations of me, you know, being a doctor, go to an Ivy League school, you know, stay away from these sports and these nonsense things, like everything that I liked, they didn't want anything. And then on the other side,
but I'm the American kid. I want to be all of that. Right.
Yeah, and I was really good. And that's what I liked. And then on the other side, socially, you know, I was very kind of, I'm very outgoing and wanted to do all the things socially that everyone else was doing. And I think I was held back a little bit by my folks on that. But then on the other hand, I was also facing some, you know, issues of being a person of color in an all white world. So there were a lot of things going on in my childhood. I don't know that I was never overly bothered by it, I think. And I think part of that is because I did have, you know, strong kind of family unit and lots of friends and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. I never really thought about what fueled me or not. I don't really think about it like that because it wasn't so bad that I would be like, oh, I'm going to get these guys. But it was.
But I think subconsciously it can look. I come from Australia. I traveled the world. I lived in different countries and I was always the new person. And I had to work a little bit harder to be not the new person anymore. Every time I moved and had to go into a new school and make new friends, and it kind of gave me this very, you know, outgoing personality where I had to find the confidence to walk up to a group of people and say, "Hi, I'm the new girl. Can I have lunch with you? Or can you show me where the classroom is? Or can you play with me? Can you be my friend?" And that doesn't happen to everybody. So I kind of get on that level, that feeling. And in the moment, we're not purposely doing it. But I think there are these aha moments in our lives. I talk a lot about them in my book and in conversations about reinvention, where you get older and you realize that the way you grew up and the things you were exposed to or not exposed to really do sort of help fuel those aha moments when you need to dig in and you need that confidence to leave a job or start something new or make a career change or, you know, something monumental.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. We call them crucible moments in the coaching
world. Okay, so talk to me a bit about that. This has sort of become your world, and you know, you've done so much in your career past and highlights. Would you say that there are things that you did as a leader and a manager in those positions that prepared you well for what you are now doing as an executive coach? And these crucible moments you speak of, how do they speak to people in their world of, you know, how do you define that and how do you work with people to define those?
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely, I think there's moments in everyone's life that shape them and that they, you know, remember in such a way that had a huge impact on the paths that they end up taking. I actually first heard the term when I was actually at Unilever and they put us through this leadership program. They put all their executives, they wanted their executives to have purpose in the same way that the brands had purpose. And I think they really wanted us to understand what that meant as individuals as well. So went through this kind of really intense leadership program that was aimed to help us find our true north.
Mm-hmm.
In that, you know, they used that term often, and there would be about 20 people in this thing for like 2 weeks, and they're from all over the world. And it kind of, you know, asked us all kind of what was your crucible moments in your life? What shaped you? And so we, you know, some people start crying, they get into this whole thing. It's like a pretty intense thing. So that's why I first heard that. And that was also the program that I think first made me think that I might want to be a coach. Because, you know, at the end of it, they give you this kind of huge binder full of stuff about you, but they kind of cull it down to kind of one line and or one page about what your true north is. And mine was to inspire others to achieve their own greatness. which surprised me a little bit because at the time, you know, I was kind of still climbing the kind of corporate ladder. And I thought more about myself as being kind of selfish and self-involved and wanting to get to the top and not really thinking that inspiring others necessarily was of top priority for me. But as it turns out, as I think back on it, you know, one of the things they talked about, what is the favorite thing you do in your life that you get the most enjoyment and all that? And all of them tied back to coaching in some manner. I mean, certainly I coached all my kids' little league teams, which were some of the best, you know, times of my life. I really enjoyed that. You know, I managed a bunch of people. I was always giving everybody kind of advice and whatnot. I was part of the only company that I was on a board of was about, you know, accelerating people's careers. So there was a lot of things that showed that that really was something that everything outside of my core job was really in that area. So it was there that I really was like, wow, you know, I should really think about what that means. And I started looking into the idea of being an executive coach. And, you know, I found it could be a lucrative business and that it could have a great impact on numerous people. And I knew that Columbia was kind of the best program there is in that space. So once I was ready, that's when I decided to kind of go back to school, get that certification and start this work.
That's amazing. So what is it? How do people recognize? I call it that gnawing feeling that you have in the back of your head when you know a reinvention is imminent. It could be any part of your life, personal, spiritual, relationships, but something is just slightly off. And the longer you sit with it, the louder it gets. Some people ignore it. They sweep it under the rug. 10 years later, they're like, oh, okay, I really do need to do, you know, the subtitle of my book is What Are You Waiting For? Yeah. What is it when you're talking with your friends, colleagues, executives, potential clients in the coaching world that you encourage people to look for? What are the warning signs or the aha moments or those annoying kind of, you know, voices in our head that you help people recognize when it's time to maybe start to really do a little deeper dive on this?
Yeah. Well, so for me, I think it was just, there were a number of things. I think part of it is just you get, you know, I started thinking about seeing other people and what they were accomplishing and the idea that, you know, you only have one life and you get X amount of time to do all the things that you want to do. And, you know, once I turned 50, I was very much like, there's a lot of things that I want to do in my life. I very much wanted to have my own company at some point. And, you know, I was thinking kind of, when am I going to do that? Am I going to do that when I'm 70? Like, you know, and I felt like the timing was right. And if you know that deep down there are things that you want to do, you know, I want to write a book like you did. I mean, I was very interested in that. I actually want to do some stand up, which I love. Which
love that. Okay, wait. We're going to change the whole focus of this podcast now. Go for it.
I knew that before I, you know, by the time I turned 60, I wanted to be able to have done a lot of that. Otherwise, I was thinking it might, you know, I might run out of time a little bit.
That's
so
great.
That's why I started really thinking about it. That was the time to change. And the other big thing I think were two of my kids are now already living in the city on their own. I have one left in college. So all the biggest payments in my life, my house I sold, my kids are in college. I had the opportunity and the ability to take on any level of risk at this point in a way that I never could have before. And I won't be able to later. So this to me was just the right timing. And I've often said, you can have everything in life. You just can't have it all at once.
Well, I love that. And you're right, the timing, and for people to recognize that, having that revelation of there must be something else, or I have a dream or a passion or an interest that I want to pursue. I talk about my big word, and this is entitlement, that the moment we know that we're entitled to have what we want in our lives, it fuels us with the ability to go and pursue it. If we don't feel we're entitled in the first place, we're not going to. So this is our world and everything pivots around each one of us. And we may have timing, circumstances, kids, parents, responsibilities, financial means, all types of things that are going to challenge us, hold us back, give us a reason not to do something. But there's the 10-year version of a dream. There is the 10-year plan, the 5-year plan. It doesn't have to be immediate. And I think once we accept that and everything that we're doing are baby steps towards it, we talk about going and working with mentors or trying something on the weekends. If it's something you think you want to do, check it out. Like, there's so many ways to engage in it. It's not an all or nothing situation.
Right.
Right. There's a process. Yep. And, you know, I'm very careful to not advise people to leave that fabulous job and, you know, turn on their family and just go, oh, I'm going to go trek the Himalayas for 6 months. See ya. No, yeah, you can't I'm do that. Like but that there's a responsible way to find a way to one day make that a part of your life or some version of that.
I like what Jack Welch used to say, change before you have to. So I think there's like this balance. It's really about threading the needle. It's you're in a position and there's going to be a time when you will have to change. And what you'd like to do is just before that period, start really planning out. It's not a perfect science, but I think optimally that's what we're going to do. When I coach people, some of the people that I coach are already in a state where, you know, they've been really successful in an industry that's now been disrupted. You know, I work with a couple of people who used to be big publishers in the magazine industry and, you know, very successful, made a lot of money and had big roles. And that industry is basically dead. And if you didn't make the adjustment or the pivot to something more digital or something more integrated years ago, you'd be in a tough spot right now to make that shift. So I'm up against some of those, you know, I'm working with some of those people who are up against that. And that's a situation where they have to pivot and they have to figure something out. That is a much harder thing to do when you're forced into it than to do it, you know, kind of the way I did or a lot of people do it. They start seeing things. You have to have a little bit of foresight. You have to have a little bit of peripheral vision to be able to understand where your life's going, where the external forces are going. You know, what are the seismic shifts happening in the world, and start thinking about how all that, you know, impacts you, your life, your family and all that. And that will help you start to think about things before they're on top of you in a situation where, you know, you better make a big change and you better make it dramatic and you better, you know, take massive actions. Otherwise, your life will never be the same. So that's kind of the way I look at it. But I typically don't recommend to people. And part of coaching is letting people figure out for themselves. I mean, it's not about me telling anyone what to do. It's really about making them, listening and helping them understand like where they are. But I am careful to push people who are already in good jobs and just want to do something new because, you know, they're bored or whatever. Like, that's typically not a great reason. it's a good thing to start looking and feeling different things out to see what might work, but then putting a plan in place to ensure that it's not overly disruptive and risky in your life. Because, again, especially if you have a family and children, you don't really want to put them – you don't want to be in a position where you're sacrificing the best things for them for you to have your your own.
No, you've got to find, you're right. And you've got to find that balance. You know, I always say you've got to have a reinvention in your back pocket. You know, what would it be? What would you fiddle with? What would you play with? What would you engage in? Yeah. And how do you dabble in that in a way, if it's something that could bring you joy? The more you know, the more you learn about it, the more it's going to, as you said, you know, if you start to change before you have to change, you'll start to allow the possibility in your mind. You'll know more about it.
You could do it more on your terms.
Exactly.
You could do it more on your terms if you start to plan it. Like, you know, you know, like part of it is if I had to all of a sudden, even if I wanted to just become a coach, I think it would have been harder to go back to school, to spend the time. And then I think setting yourself up earlier in your career, you know, there's a lot of things that I think are very important in someone's career to be able to ultimately, you know, set them up for a change later in their life. And I think one of those things, which I've been very fortunate to have, is a network. You know, when I went back to school, I was kind of giving myself a year or so to make no money, go to school, figure out this whole coaching thing, practice on some clients and whatnot. And what I found was as soon as I posted it on LinkedIn without doing a ton of marketing, I got a lot of incoming clients, like people who knew me from the business or, you know, people who knew the stuff I was posting on social media, and they reached out and I got many clients that way, which, you know, goes, you know, I think it really shows the power of having some level of personal brand or visibility or whatever you want to call it along the way. It's more than just your, you know, solely focused heads down on your job. You also have to think about, you know, your visibility in places that you ultimately aspirationally want to be. So, you know, that's what part of what I do as a coach is I really help people, you know, with executive presence, not just, you know, on stage or, in a boardroom or in the office, but on social media, at parties, at events? Like, how do you build yourself up in such a way that people recognize you, know your strengths off the bat, and immediately give you credibility when you stop doing something because they already know you from something else? You know, they know you from
when you're no longer your title, who are you to people? What is that connection? And I think that's a big issue that a lot of people have.
Make no mistake, everyone will at some point no longer be family at a company. You know, you either quit, right, fired, you will get laid off. Everybody goes through, no matter how great you are, no matter how much you think you're part of something very special, you probably are at that time. And you may be for a long time, but at some point you're going to need to be able to be out there and stand on your own 2 feet as you, not the VP or SVP of this company or that company. You are you, and you're going to want to do it, especially now that our careers are going to be lasting much longer. Yep. We're probably going to have 2 or 3 pivots in our life. The more you are, the more well-known you are for your craft or for what you want to be well-known for, the better opportunity you have to be compensated for that and to be, you know, to get clients, to get jobs, whatever, than you would be if you were a total unknown.
Yeah, no, that's amazing advice and so true. We're seeing it every day. As you know, we talked about this over a light lunch about a week and a half ago when we saw each other in New York.
And I totally recognize now your Australian accent.
Did I just say something that sounded Australian? Oh, good. Well, no, finally.
It definitely comes out. It definitely has come out a few times.
Thankfully. That's great. It's really interesting. And I think that now as I'm doing these sort of, as I call them, these DIY, three short, teach a man to fish consulting sessions, helping people understand how to start to set themselves up to think about this. They need to do the work. They need to work with people like you, Babs, who are really going to help take them the distance and understand. Because, you know, I get so many phone calls incoming from people, given the book and the podcast and the virtual chats and being out there as much as I am with my personal brand and my business brand, that people are going, I want to reinvent my life. I got to figure out what to do. Can you spend time with me? So now I've created these three sort of short sessions that help really set people up for the way to think of it and how to really sort of kickstart it. But to go the distance, to really do the work, is the work that you're doing. So I'm really excited because I feel like we're going to be sharing a lot of conversations, and I'm going to be sending people your way to really do the deep dive work that needs to be done. And I think we're living in this world with our peers, whether it has to do with the time that we're living in right now, post-COVID, the age that we're at, in our storied careers, where this is a big conversation. People are leaving their big corporate jobs for either that last one, that last gig, as I keep hearing people say, or to go into more a collaborative consulting environment where they can do things with people like us and work on projects. And they need to figure it out. I mean, I've had people who are significant, you know, chairman of a huge global bank call me saying, I'm going to be a consultant. I don't know how to do that. And you're going, okay, seriously, someone with that title is asking me that question? Well, guess what? This is a different vocation, and that's okay. Because, you know, just because I always say, just because you make a great meatball doesn't mean you should run a restaurant. If you know nothing about running a restaurant business, but you know how to make one hell of a good meatball, those are two different universes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think people need to learn to not be afraid to ask and not be afraid to reach over and say, I need guidance, I need tools, I need information, I need a different thought process. And that's the work that you're able to do with people. And it's exciting, as you said, to be able to help inspire and change people's lives.
And just like you said, I'm always, you know, I really, one of the things I've been very surprised with, I've been coaching a lot of kind of CMOs and senior VPs of marketing and things like that, you know, pretty senior executives. And I'm sometimes surprised by certain areas that they really are not well-versed in and just kind of covering it while they can, you know, too.
Yeah.
Because also that role, the CMO role, has changed so much over the years that what they may have been trained in for 10, 20 years is so different now with, you know, the role being kind of half mostly CMO, but, you know, chief digital officer, chief experience officer, you know, chief growth officer. There's all these other roles now. And a lot of people weren't necessarily trained in all of those things, but they're too senior in some cases to be vulnerable enough to ask the questions mm-hmm. about, well, what does that mean?
Completely.
And all the people I'm coaching, I think in some way, shape or form are dealing with some level of that. And then in some cases, they're just, you know, to your point about kind of running a business, starting your own business, doing your own thing versus working in a corporation is two different worlds, especially if you've never worked at a startup.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of fear and you know, anxiety in making that kind of switch as well. So a lot of the coaching I do is in helping them kind of really, you know, get off the ledge and start thinking about how to do it in a way that makes them more kind of prepared for that. Yeah. Because once you're prepared, your confidence, you know, skyrockets.
100%.
Well, no.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, that helps them a lot. So sometimes it's just having a coach, I think. What I love about, you know, in a lot of other businesses, look at this, if you look at sports, even the best, the greatest of athletes, Tiger Woods has coaches, multiple coaches. He's always got coaches working on different things. And they can't exist without coaches, exactly. No matter how great you are. And yet in the business world where you're often C-level folks are making as much or more, and there's more at stake certainly than if you're playing third base or playing golf or whatever. And yet, you know, they don't have any coaches and they're kind of flying blind and they have no one to talk to.
No one to talk to.
Who's the CMO and CEO going to talk to? They can't talk to their team because they don't want to make themselves look stupid.
Yep.
They also don't want to show vulnerability.
Yep.
They can't talk to their family. They don't know anything about their business. They can't talk to a therapist because they might be able to help them with their issues personally and psychologically. But again, they can't really help them in the business world. Even as coaches go, I mean, I think one of the things that's unique that several CMOs have told me is that my unique combination of coaching, having coaching education, but also executive leadership experience in the kind of companies that I've worked for, helps them with kind of organizational and business 100%. Challenges, as well as the therapeutic part and the career part. So, you know, it's a good combination. A lot of coaches, executive coaches, often come from HR or learning and development or really just psychologists. And nothing's wrong with any of those roles. I think they're all great and right for different kinds of issues. But I think for a person who's an executive who's thinking about, you know, reinventing, as you call it, or even just performing better, being a better leader or developing executive presence, all those things, I think it's very helpful to have someone who's kind of been there and been in your shoes and also has the coaching credentials combined. I personally, when I had a coach, I had a couple of coaches. They were more from the psychology background, which was, again, I guess it was helpful, but not in the same way that I wish I was my own coach.
Yeah.
Just like,
well, I was going to say,
I wish I was coaching me as a kid when I was little too. Like I always think back to how would I coach the, as you called it, little Babs.
Yeah. Little Babs. I love that. Well, you know, but then. I love that. And I think you're right. I myself, up until a year ago, had never had the extraordinary experience of speaking to an executive coach about me. And, you know, I spend my life helping other people and inspiring them and working with all these clients and all these brands and all these companies, helping them pivot and reinvent and establish their brand purpose and their company. And then on the reinvention front, but never taken the time for myself to really kind of sit back and do it. So that self-actualization is a pretty special thing, you know, when you get to do it with someone who can guide you. And as you said, you're not telling people what to do. You're helping them understand who they are and identifying them. And I think that's just an amazing place. And I'm so excited for you. And we've known each other for a very, very long time, but have really, you know, gotten the chance to get to know each other better and had some pretty meaningful conversations as of late. So I'm really excited because I feel like it is just the beginning. I think there's going to be a lot of yin yang in the people I deal with and talk to. And I'm like, go to Babs. He's your guy.
Another good term is it's just the beginning. I love the talking about the fact that, you know, the pivot also represents, you know, what I call the back nine in terms of age and in career.
Yeah.
You know, we have an opportunity, like so many people have done extraordinary things after their first career or after they turn 50.
Right.
I'm very much hoping to do that. And, and I feel very confident that I will, and I'm very excited about it. So I'm going to read your book too. I still haven't got a chance to read
it. Well, thank you. I'm delighted. And it's, I think you'll appreciate how aligned we are in a lot of our thinking. And so we'll have to do a follow-up on that. Yeah. One quick question before I have to let you go. And is, if you were to have a dinner party and you could have a couple of really interesting people that inspire you in unusual and wonderful ways, they could be dead or alive. So we're pulling from a very, very wide range of people. Is there three or four people that you might want to have at that table to break bread with?
that's a good question. Of course, there's always the classics, but you know what I love? I would love to have my father's father at dinner. I never met him. He died when my father was very young, and he talks about him often, and he was a big force in his, you know, making him the person that was able to leave a village to become a doctor in America. So I think he would be a very cool person. I would love to ask him about my dad when he was a kid.
Amazing.
The classic is always Gandhi, obviously, especially I'm Indian, and I was born a day before his birthday. So if I was born a day later, my name would have been Gandhi.
I bet.
I think I could have worn that well.
I think you, okay, we can rename you, you know, why not? We can do whatever we want.
And then in a more kind of, I don't know, call it a fun set of people at dinner, Farrah Fawcett Majors, who I had, every possible sticker and card and poster of in my room when I was little.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I actually work with the Farrah Fawcett Foundation. They're one of our clients.
What?
So, yes.
Oh, my God. Get me in on that.
We'll have to chat about that further. Okay.
Yeah, she would definitely. Joe Namath, Broadway Joe.
Yes.
Quarterback at the only time the Jets won the soup, and they were huge underdogs. I think he would be. And he also had an incredible life. He was like a model and an actor and a superstar, a quarterback in New York and all that. I think Joe Torre, certainly I've learned a lot from his leadership lessons. Dave Kingman, just for sheer fun. He was a guy that a big home run hitter when I was a kid. I think Obama. I would like to have Obama, first black president. He's just everything, you know. I think I would really enjoy listening to some things. So there's probably several others, but
I think I am coming to your dinner party. I'll bring the wine. I love that, and I just love this conversation.
And Jeter, of course.
Oh, of course. Well, I know we'll have to figure out how to pull that one together, but. I just really appreciate your time today, Babs. I appreciate the conversation. Yeah. I know that you and I are going to have a lot more, and I hope that for the audience listening, that you're getting a glimpse of what is possible, the confidence that it instills in one to have a little sense of direction when you're in questioning what's possible. I'd love to encourage people to reach out to Babs. Babs, is LinkedIn the best way to reach you? What's the best way for people? I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, they could LinkedIn me. My email is babs2627@gmail.com. Also coach@ccbabs.com. And, you know, besides the coaching, I also, half of my work is in marketing consulting. I do a lot of work in the world of helping people kind of build a marketing tech stack. I help them provide practical frameworks for optimizing data and MarTech stack to enhance kind of your customer journey and sales, as well as, you know, set yourself up for artificial intelligence, which, you know, won't mean anything if you don't have polished, organized data. So that, as well as the coaching, are both areas that I'm wide open to. So
great.
Would love to hear from
you. We're going to include that information in the show notes for anybody driving, listening, or on the go that doesn't have a pen or some way to make a note of that. So you can look at the show notes of this episode so that you can connect directly with Babs. I am so grateful for you being here. For anybody.
That was so fun.
Thank you.
I love that. That was great. And I love being the 100th episode.
You are the 100th episode. So for anybody who's tuning in and wants more content, wants more inspiration, please go to the reinventionexchange.com. You'll see years now of podcasts and virtual chats and blogs, and you can buy my book there and get a signed copy if you order it directly, or on Amazon or Apple Books.
In the very near future,
we're going to help Babs get his book out there into the world very soon. Yes. So we'll have to have you back.
Through the Eyes of the Game. 9 chapters, 9 innings, or 9 chapters, a lesson learned in each chapter from the world of
sports.
So
you're going to have to come back on here when the book comes out so that we can talk about that. And I thank you again.
What about when I do my stand-up?
Definitely doing the stand-up. I mean, that's a given. Thank you, everybody. Happy reinventing, Babs. So good to see you. And thanks for being a guest. Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend. And thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.